Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio. We thank you for listening. By the way, we talked yesterday about being on the air very soon in Jacksonville, Florida. And then I know we had more than one listener say, you're already on in Jacksonville because I'm listening to you. Well, we're on an AM station, but we're going to be on an FM station very soon, covering a lot of new area there in the greater Jacksonville, Florida area.
It's a big market. A lot of
big market. So we're on AM, but we'll be on FM very soon from now. I'm Tim Wildman with Abe Vitagliano. Where did Abe go?
I don't know. I didn't ask him when he left. I'm sure he's taking care of some businesses.
Am I my brother's keeper?
To nature. No, I think he's in the bathroom. How's that?
You think he had to go to restroom break?
Well, here he comes.
He forced me. Sorry, Abe.
All right, Abe. Welcome back. We just didn't know if it was something Ed said that you were offended by or whatever, but you're back. Okay, welcome back. Abe, Ed, and Tim here. Thank you for listening to American Family Radio. You can check out our Today's Issues Facebook page and read the articles that we discuss here and also comment on them. If you would like to, you can watch the show there as well. Steve Jordahl is tag-teamed with Fred Jackson. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
All right, Steve, what's going on?
Well, may I first apologize to our listeners in Jacksonville when I couldn't bring up the name of my NFL friend, my best buddy ever that I...
Yesterday you talked about this.
We talked about this.
His name, my good friend, what's his name?
His name is is Rich Griffith, and he was a Jacksonville Jaguar for several years around the turn of between 2000 and so. But anyway.
So he played in the NFL.
Played in the NFL and was a big fan. He was very proud of his time with Jacksonville.
So when he called you and said, hey, I can't believe.
I remembered it. It's just one of those things. This is my nightmare, my stress dream. It isn't going to school in my underwear or anything. My stress dream is having to introduce a bunch of people that I know, but I can't remember their names.
Hey, that happens now. I'm just telling you.
That's my stress. Oh, this is my wife.
That is a bad. That's the worst dream than going to school in your drawers right there, Steve.
I tell you, that's my stress.
Let me introduce you to my wife.
In fact, going to school in your underwear is punishment for doing that.
Yes. That's my stress dream.
I tell you, my wife and I, Allison, we had a real awkward moment the other day, and this has never happened before, but I don't know why it hasn't. We were walking in a restaurant for dinner and out. And so there's two people standing out who were friends of ours that we haven't seen in a long time.
Oh.
They had moved away. So they were back in town. So they're standing right out there and we engage them, talk about it, hug their neck, shake their hand. How's it going? You know, have a seat like that. Well, pardon me. At the very, within 30 seconds, another couple walks out, same thing.
Oh, I see.
We lived in a community with them, haven't seen them in a long time. Our kids played ball together, a lot to catch up on. So we're sitting, and these two couples don't know each other.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Seinfeld moment, isn't it? I think.
And it's my worst dream come true, I think, for you.
Yeah, so Allison and I are sitting there. And we've got...
Are you seated or standing?
No, we're standing outside the restaurant.
Okay, all right.
We're standing outside the restaurant. We're going in. They're coming out. So you've got two couples that don't know each other that we got so much catching up to do. So we're standing there trying to engage. You see what's going on here? And it's just really... It wasn't fair to either one of them.
Well, and you couldn't remember names?
No, names weren't a problem. It's that when you haven't seen anybody for 5 years or 4 or 3 years, and you had a good relationship back when your kids grew up together, or something like that. you're trying to talk to. What I'm saying is, imagine trying to catch up with. Imagine
both.
Trying to catch up with two different couples at the same time, and they don't know each other.
My mind was going in a completely different direction. Here's two couples that you hadn't seen in a while. They don't know each other, and you can't remember their names to introduce them. That's what I was thinking.
Oh no,
that's
my dream.
That's what happens to me.
No, I knew their names. I just
brother. Here's another Christian brother.
That's where my wife often rescues me in those situations. She's pretty good with names.
Mine too. I just don't introduce. I let that person introduce themselves to my wife. Or whoever.
And then you can just pretend like, oh, boy, I should have. I'm sorry.
There you go.
So now you just let the world know if you go somewhere with Tim, if you want to know if he knows your name, don't introduce yourself to his company.
I'll see if he says anything.
Or say, Tim, aren't you going to introduce us?
There it is. Yeah, right.
I'll just tell you straight up, I'm not going to know your name probably because I deal with so many people.
Yeah, that's true.
It is embarrassing, but, you know, they do have a course you can take. I know life insurance salesmen use this. You know, or people.
I think it's hogwash. I think the course is you've taken it. You let your wife do it.
But I'm talking about if you're in a business where you're in sales, you can't say what was your name again.
Yeah right.
the third time, you're not getting a sale. You better remember their name.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right, Steve.
Time's up, Steve. Sorry.
Yeah, really.
Steve, what's good's happening in the world today?
Well, I don't know if it's good, but it certainly is amusing. We have the snowflakes are out in force today, and at the University of Washington in Tacoma, they have decided that English grammar is racist. American grammar is racist.
I think people need to sit down for this story.
They might need to.
And maybe, I don't get a drink of something that calms them.
They say, and I'm quoting here, racism is the normal condition of things. Racism is pervasive.
You're lying. You're making this story up.
I'm not.
Let me see where you're getting this from. Where are you getting this from? Huh?
Racism is the normal condition of things.
Okay, is this from the University of Washington?
This is the document from the University of Washington. And so this is their writing center. This is their grammar center where people go to get help with their writing, and they say, the consultants in the Writing Center assume that a big part of their job is to help students become more critical of these unjust language structures as they affect student writing and the judgment of that writing.
Now, let me just bust them right here. Okay, this is like a press release?
No, it's like, it's kind of like that. It's their one page about what they do.
So what is the grammar like in this announcement?
It's pretty racist.
That's right.
It's pretty racist. And by the way, I printed it out on a white piece of paper.
Well,
so that just goes to show you.
My point before you really brought race into the issue, my point was they are calling grammar racist, and they're not going to do it anymore. And they make that announcement
with all
in
the
a
proper
statement
periods
that's grammatically
commas.
Correct.
Yes, they did.
Well, it's,
so they promise to
stupid is as
emphasize
stupid does.
Emphasize the importance of rhetorical situations over grammatical correctness in the production of their texts.
This is absolute lunacy.
Apparently, what is it? Was it called in the day Ebonics? Is that what they used to call
Ebonics,
the ghetto talk or whatever it was when different people? You know, it's hard enough understanding people that use correct grammar in different parts of the country. Me being new to the South, sometimes I'm amazed at what I can't understand when people are actually speaking correct grammar. But this is taking it a step further.
So let me ask you, are they saying that when you write, you should, let's use Ebonics, I don't even know if term is used anymore, but that Ebonics was kind of slang for inner city.
I'm thinking that when it comes to, sorry for me, I mean, I would have loved to have seen an example of what they consider correct writing.
What's not racist writing?
Well, anything that you write is racist. Anything, Abe, that you write is not, I'm assuming.
Abe is one of the most articulate.
Why that?
I don't understand what you just said.
Abe is one of the most articulate for just verbalizing, speaking.
Let me finish.
I'm complimenting, okay? And he's an excellent writer. So would he be considered, Well, would he be, since he's black, would he be considered an Uncle Tom because he's using proper grammar? I'm not sure I follow the argument. Steve, you need to explain yourself here.
The argument for most colleges is that it's impossible for anybody but white people to be racist, and it's impossible for white people to be anything but racist. So therefore, whatever you decide you want to write, however you want to write it, it's inherently racist.
Grammar.
Well, I wish somebody had told me this like in the sixth grade,
I wouldn't have spent my whole life.
Where does grammar come from, Ed?
Well, the English language is kind of a hybrid anyway, so it's one of the most difficult languages to learn because it's got all kinds of rules and exceptions. But generally speaking, I think our language and the rules of grammar come from Greek, Latin, Germany, Teutonic peoples, Anglo-Saxon, all of that mixed up together from French, you know, Old English, all of that. And that's where our rules come from. That's why it's so hard to learn. That's why the singular of deer is deer and the plural of deer is deer, you know, and if the plural of mouse is mice, how come the plural of
spouse
is not spice?
Because you're not allowed to have more than one.
Ice. So all those.
That was a great nursery rhyme you created right there.
I want to put some music to that. Yeah. Take that show on the
That's
road.
A rap.
If the sing. Yeah.
It would. That would be a rap. Be a good rap song right
well,
there.
Well, you're not going to get much of a rap song from me.
No.
But
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Abe. This is disgusting. You know,
what is?
I mean, this. To say the English language is inherently racist. You're assuming that people, because of their skin color, they can't learn the English language? I mean, what is it now? Is it racist to become literate? Yeah. I mean, where are we going with this?
I'll tell you, this is a story that I had a month or two ago. We never got to it, so I never use it. But there's actually a college somewhere in Northern Africa where the students decided that they should not have to study science and learn like the principles of physics because science itself was racist. And they quoted one of the young ladies who said, well, how do we know that that magic is not just as scientific as like the laws of gravity? They said that because most of the scientists, were white, that studying science was inherently racist. So that's just as disgusting as this, to use Abe's word.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Check out you're going to post that article that Steve just referenced?
Yes, I will.
Steve Jordahl will give that to Walker. Walker will post that article about the grammar being racist, so says the University of Washington. To borrow from Dave Barry, we're not making this stuff up. Hey, joining us now from New York is our good friend Todd Starnes, who's got a number one bestseller out, and it's called, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. We've talked about this before. Todd's great writer, and it's a fun book, but it's also got some good stuff in there that's meaty. And he joins us to talk about how the book's doing and also how the New York Times is treating it. Todd, good morning.
Tim, good morning, and I have to confess, my book was written in Southern English.
Well, that's okay.
I think the word shuck it to the cob is in there somewhere, and slobberknockers. So.
Shuck it to the cob. And
I had to explain in the book that when I was talking about smoked pork butt, that did not involve rolling paper.
Oh, man.
Can we say that on AFR?
Well, we just did. And send all your emails to Todd Starnes at so-and-so. So,
FoxNews.com.
You've got your books out, your book's called The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again by Todd Starnes. The book's been out, what, a couple weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, it has. And sweet Lord, I didn't know we had so many deplorables across the fruited plain.
Right? And it's doing well?
It's doing very well. We've hit a number of bestseller lists, USA Today and Google, Amazon, Publishers Weekly, and the Conservative Book Club. And my Aunt Lynn says it's number one in her list.
Well, absolutely. What about the New York Times?
Yeah, we got a problem there, interestingly enough. You know, my publisher, Charisma House, we were waiting to hear about the New York Times, and according to BookScan, this is the company that actually measures how many books are sold in the country. According to BookScan, we were number two on the New York Times bestseller list, so we outsold all but one of the top 10 books on the list. But it turns out that the New York Times didn't put us on the list.
Why?
Apparently, my book was too deplorable. we don't know. My publisher reached out and hoped to get an explanation because they have a tendency to do this with conservative authors. This has happened in the past. And just I think it was last week, Fox News had a story about the book detailing the abortion doctor, Kermit Gosnell. That book did not make the list, even though it certainly made the criteria. But the New York Times has their own set of criteria, and quite frankly, it's really not a bestsellers list as much as it is a New York Times, here's the books we want you to read list.
Todd Starnes joining us from New York. Ed?
Well, you know, we've used the word disgusting several times
yes.
on this program. I just want to use it again. Listen, yeah. this goes back, this is why people... They don't like the media. They're kicking back now at President Trump, who is calling them on everything, even mm-hmm. maybe some things they haven't done, you know, but he's calling them out on it. And this is the kind of thing that normal people, the deplorables, normal people hear and they go, I just hate the New York Times and I don't trust them to do anything. Nothing they do is going to be according to the rules. And this is a perfect example of it.
And I'd add in that there are also some people who may not be considered, you know, conservatives that are starting to pay attention to this kind of stuff and say, you know, wait a minute, this is a bridge too far. We know that certain people that don't like Republicans don't like whatever, but we didn't expect people like in Todd's example, just because of who he is and what he represents, that you're going to deny the fact that he sold that many books? I mean, Right. Come on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, you know, guys, we know the New York Times has been guilty of posting fake news. We didn't realize they were also in the business of posting fake lists. And, you know, honestly, you know, from a writer's standpoint, you know, the New York Times, that's kind of something that you know, that's kind of a feather in your cap as a writer to make that list. You know, it's hard to get on. But, you know, our publisher reached out and said, hey, you know, what's the deal here? And it seems as though whatever criteria they have, they're not going to share. And that's, you know, that's their right. That's their prerogative. But I think they should at least be honest and open with the general public about it. Because, again, we had the number two book in the country, according to in paperbacks, according to BookScan. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at on this thing, guys. And I got to tell you something, though. You know what? I care more about the opinion of my readers, the gun-toting, Bible-clinging deplorables, than I do the folks over at the New York Times.
Yeah, but it sure is nice to have New York Times best-selling author on the cover of your book underneath your name. I mean, that does carries a lot of weight with people when they pick up a book. If they're not familiar with who you are, they pick up a book and they see that, they go, oh, okay. Maybe I'll take a chance on this guy. Mm-hmm. So it is a way, I'm not putting these words in your mouth, Todd. I'm saying it is a way for the New York Times to create an exclusive club that excludes the deplorables.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly. And, you know, ironically, I actually wrote about that in the book, about how the mainstream media treats us all like we're a bunch of backwater bigots. And that's, they still don't get it. They still don't understand what happened on Election Day. That we the people rose up, and you know they're trying every trick in their book, trying to call Donald Trump a racist, calling him anti-Jewish. I mean, every day there's some sort of a new slur hurled, new smear hurled at President Trump, and quite frankly, against those who voted for him as well. And that's really what this is all about. I think it's again the mainstream media saying, you know what? We really don't care what those deplorable people think.
Todd, Steve Jordahl here from One News Now. You've probably noticed that the New York Times is at the forefront of this anti-Trump, anti-administration, anti-Republican push.
Anti-deplorable.
anti-deplorable push, along with the Washington Post. Time magazine was also particularly egregious at this. But so does it surprise you in a way that that they're doing this?
You know, it doesn't, but it's disappointing. I mean, you know, for us, you know, writing this book and putting together this project is something that we all took pride in. And, you know, my book is an encouraging piece of work, I hope. I do believe that God is not finished with our country yet, and I do believe that people of faith, those deplorable people that the liberals talk about, I believe that we have a responsibility to engage our culture and to stand strong. And we don't have to be the noisy gongs or clanging cymbals that they talk about in the Bible, but we do have to take a stand. And I suspect that the mainstream media wants to silence the deplorables. They don't believe we have a place in the public marketplace. They don't believe our ideas are worthy of debate. And that's why Hillary Clinton said, you know, what she said about the basket of deplorables. But guys, I want to go back to the other word she used. It wasn't just basket of deplorables. She used the word irredeemable.
Right.
And that really says a lot about what they think about folks who go to church and cherish those traditional American values.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's the name of the show, Today's Issues. And we're just about out of time. Todd, what you working on? Can you tell us what you're working on right now? What story?
Oh, yes. We've got a big story coming from Michigan State University, where they're banning whiteboards. And it's not because whiteboards are white, which was my first guess, whiteboard privilege. No, apparently people have been writing naughty words on other people's whiteboards in the dorms, and so they're going to go ahead and ban whiteboards outright.
So these are the whiteboards that are on a dorm, outside a dorm room. I remember them when I was in college. Yeah. And you write a little note, hey, I'll see you at the gym or something like that. So now they're writing naughty words and they're just banning them.
And now nobody, there's no place for people to write their daily haikus.
They have to write, I would figure those things would be almost obsolete anymore anyway because of text and social media and everything.
Language is racist, Tim.
You forgot. That's right. You forgot.
Hey. Todd, we got another story for you.
He's probably
seen
it.
Steve Jordahl already beat you to it.
Todd, did you see the story out of the University of Washington in Tacoma where they're saying that all grammar is racist?
You know, I heard something about that. I think I heard it from, did I hear that from you, Steve?
You probably did.
You might have. We were talking about it right before you came on the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You see, I grew up in the South, so I just assumed everything that I say they think is racist.
Okay. Hey, Ty, by the way, Maxine Waters, the Democrat Party representative from California, she's wanting to one-up Hillary Clinton because she calls the Trump administration, quote, a bunch of scumbags. So there's your title for your next book.
Next book, right.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, the Scumbag's Guide to Making America Great Again. I think you need to, that would be your follow-up best.
Maybe I can put it on a whiteboard.
All right, Todd, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas.
Todd Starnes joining us from New York City.
New York City.
New York City.
Get a rope.
Does Todd sound like he's...
Now, that's a reference to...
Get a rope. What is that?
Yeah, salsa commercial.
A salsa commercial.
That, yeah. That's Pace, when the New York Pace City Pace thing Picante's you said.
Yeah.
When
you what salsa company is that?
I don't even remember.
It was Pace. And they're sitting around a campfire, a bunch of cowboys, and they said, this salsa, where'd it come from? It's made in New York City. And then somebody says, get a rope.
Yeah.
Yeah, as in, I was just a
and we don't
flashback,
advocate
yeah.
Getting a rope for people who make New York salsa, but that's just the commercial.
I meant no harm.
All right, deplorables, we'll see you back here tomorrow.